Joining me today is Artistic Director of On the Verge Theater, Ave Lawyer, actress Rachel Lee Rogers, and actor Kevin Hardesty. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's exciting.
So when we left off with The Doll's House Part 1, Nora, played by you, Rachel, had just stormed out the door, leaving your husband, played by Kevin, standing there, mouth hanging open. The most famous door slam in theatrical history. And now with Part 2, the door opens.
The door opens and something very surprising happens. Of course, Nora re-enters. But Part 2 is the imagining of a sort of rather amazing young modern playwright named Lucas Naith, who had this audacious idea to write a sequel to the most famous ending of a play in history. So it's his imagining of what would have happened if Nora had to come back and essentially face the music and confront the people that she left in her wake as she went off to find herself. So it's modern, it's fresh, it's very surprising and beautifully plotted. And you do not need to know the first play to enjoy this one. It's a self-contained piece of work. It's fun if you do, but not essential.
Rachel and Kevin, 15 years have passed between Part 1 and 2. How do you all as actors fast forward time so quickly mentally in such an actual short amount of time?
Well, Part 1 was such an adventure that I feel like it did age me 15 years. but we're thinking about what she went through, and she went from a housewife to an anarchist, and that's enormous. Mm-hmm. So how do you grapple with that? That's the interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Kevin?
And Torvald stayed at home.
Took care of the kids.
Yeah, you know, and it's an interesting time gap. Ave was talking about Lucas Naith, and we were listening to some interviews where he talked about taking the original Doll's House, stripping away all of the, you know, things that we find familiar, the macaroons and the little squirrels, and just finding that Nora and Torvald basically dance around each other. You know, the real problem is one of a lack of communication, you know. So having this 15-year gap for him to ruminate on all of these things that she's told him, and, you know, just to continue the conversation. So it's fascinating.
Ave, the setting, is it still in the same house?
We are still in the Brandbarrow house. Thank you, Episcopal Diocese of Lexington, for continuing to tolerate us.
It feels like our home now.
It does,
really does
feel like our home.
It does. We leave corsets and pantyhose everywhere.
We do, and they're very, very tolerant of that. but we have to rethink it, because this is a completely different play. This is not sort of the old Victorian kind of, you know, approach. So we've had to rethink it. And there are some surprises in store for the audience. If they expect to step back in and find the same place that Nora left, that's not what they're going to find. But it is the same venue.
Well, the last one, you had the audience move from room to room with the action of the play. Is that still the same thing this time, too?
It is. It will happen. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think you're going from a cupcake to a piece of steak.
There you go. Sort of a backwards meal.
Yeah.
You get your dessert.
Yeah. Okay. Because she's had to be a cupcake, and now she's getting down to the blood of things.
What's fascinating, as you remember, Wendy, because you were there, that people hung out and talked about the play when it was over.
Oh,
so
yes.
Many different points of view. Was she right? Should she have left him? Did he have a chance to speak?
Mm-hmm.
So many different points of view. This play stirs up even more of that. So we expect that, you know, the audience is not going to want to leave the space when it's over. They're going to want to hang out and tell us what they thought, because, boy, does everyone express their opinions.
Yeah. And they did after
Forcefully.
Part one.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. Was this the first time you all worked together in a play?
No, we've done several things before. Venus and Fur is a really popular seminal work.
Yeah.
We've done Don Juan on Trial, things like that.
And, you know, there's a sense of trust. I mean, we talk about working together. Obviously, Rachel and I have and know each other on a personal level, but also just the other actors. We've got a great cast. Samantha Doane Bates is a fantastic actress. Tay Schultz is in this piece. But, you know, we've all had some sense of working together before, and that trust is just invaluable. When you go into a process, you're able to skip steps, you know, so you can get right to the meat of the work and the trust and the vulnerability that's required to do it at a high level. So that helps.
What's next for you two after Doll's House?
Well, we both, Kevin and I, are very active in the Kentucky Humanities Chautauqua program. Mm-hmm. I play Jean Ritchie, play my dulcimer all over Kentucky, and Kevin does Daniel Boone and Jefferson Davis. So that's a thing that we love to do. Those are one people shows, so you're by yourself. And how delightful it is to be back in the room mm-hmm. with an active, intelligent director and a cast that is willing to bat the ball.
Alvi, yes, what are you doing next after Adolphus?
I'm taking a long rest, darling, and waiting for the universe to tell me what's next. There's really nothing on the timeline.
Is this your first On the Verge?
It is. Yeah, yes. It's been fascinating. I've never done the site-specific theater, and it's... You know, when we first started, I told one of my fellow actors, it's almost like doing a film without the film crew, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's so intimate. The audience is so close. You know, there's no business with projection or, you know, it's right there. It's so immediate. And just to have the reality of doing in the room and in the space that we're actually in, it's been interesting. Yeah. And fun.
Exciting.
A lot of fun.
It's just very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
So since we have both of you here, would you mind reading for us?
Sure.
Doing
love
some lines?
To. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Torvald. I see that you see me as some kind of monster, but you're not totally clean here either. You've changed what really happened in your mind. You make yourself into the victim, the blameless, the right, the better of the two. That's you. That's how you are. You have to be right and superior. This thing you do, this thing that men do of standing in front of women and looking down at them, telling them how the world works, educating them, me, us, about how things should be, as if you were some sort of expert.
And what would happen if we, men, if we didn't? I wonder sometimes about this. Yeah, I won't disagree. It happens. We do this, okay? But I wonder if women don't ask that men behave the way we behave in some ways.
Really?
If we didn't project some kind of confidence, an assuredness in what we know or think we know, would women even be attracted to men?
Confidence is different from...
To stand up straight and lead.
That's different from talking down to me.
How? Explain the difference.
Also, here's another thing that bothers me. You don't get angry.
Of course I do.
Maybe once you've ever gotten...
No, right now I feel angry.
Right now you feel angry.
Damn right I do.
I don't believe that you are angry, that you're in it, that you're inside of that feeling of feeling angry right now. No, I think you're just outside of it, looking at it as if it's some sort of interesting thing. You don't act. You're constipated. You're scared. I don't like that you're scared. It's a really big turnoff.
Sorry, I'm not trying to turn you on right now.
And there it is.
What?
That tone.
Of?
Condescension.
Not standing up for myself?
Yeah, I don't read that as standing up for yourself at all.
Then what is it? What is the difference between being condescending and standing up for myself? You won't say, even though I've asked you twice to show me.
So that you can just disprove me?
So you can educate me. I would like to learn.
You'd like to be right.
I'd like you to stand up and take the lead and teach me something.
I did 15 years ago, right here, I did that.
No, no. What happened 15 years ago, if you'd like to talk about that, okay, let's talk about that.
Wow.
It's very real. Mm-hmm. It's very present. I love how Lucas Nath has written this piece in a way that it feels like talking about a relationship in 2019.
Absolutely. It's very modern, but also, too, I can imagine it, the two of you with those characters having that conversation.
Sure, because there's really, what difference is there between a Victorian couple and a couple
exactly.
Now? We're people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the conversation we didn't get to have, right? I mean,
yeah.
At the end of, for those who are familiar or saw the first part, you know, Nora walks out as she has to and needs to, but... You know, it takes Torvald by shock, you know. It's what did you call it? He's kneecapped, right? He's gut-kicked at the end. He doesn't have time to process or make amends or ask that they have a chance to work through the problems, you know. So he's had 15 years to ruminate on that, and that's you know, we get to have the conversation that needed to be had.
It's hard to approach Nora 15 years after. She is celebrated for the door slam, mm-hmm. but there are ramifications for the door slam.
There's collateral damage.
Yeah. There are three children. There is a husband who didn't perhaps get the chance to make amends for what I feel, as a woman playing Nora, was abuse. He abused her. And so there are all these ramifications, and it is a lot.
It really is like a boxing match. It's been sort of compared to that, because Nora has to go. She comes to the house because she wants something. No details. But she has to go several rounds with people to get what she wants and then surprisingly find something else. She has to contend, which is to look these people in the eye and defend her position. And that's very different from sort of, you know, writing a book or articulating or making a speech.
Yeah.
To look someone in the eye, someone that you have a personal relationship with, and still stand up for your principles.
Yes, because you can be theoretically mm-hmm. pro a number of things that are volatile
right.
in society, but then having to come down and defend them on a personal level is enormous. It's very difficult. It's the difference between being a casual feminist and getting your hands bloody for the cause.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's interesting that everyone has a different extreme point of view, but everyone has a valid point of view.
Oh, you're wrong, I'm right.
I mean, I think that's the ingenuity of the play, is that everyone has a disparate opinion, but they are all valid from their perspective and from their life experience, you know.
And no matter who you are in the audience, you're going to agree with some things and you're going to violently disagree with others. But the point is, and that's what theater does, is in this play, these characters are forced to sit and listen to an opposing point of view. And that's what the audience has to do as well. You're captive in this room. You're having to listen to things you may not believe or take in or have thought you would agree with. But you're exposed to everyone here has to listen. And then we discuss it. And that's, again, what theater is supposed to do. It's supposed to make you listen to opposing points of view or contrary points of view. And, again, that's what makes this play so exciting and so modern.
So if someone wants to come see the play, how do they find out more information?
We would encourage them to do so. Tickets are on sale right now at ontheverge.org. And I can tell you that opening night, which is July 10th, is sold out. But there are still definitely tickets available for the weekend of the 18th through the 20th and the 25th through the 27th. And tickets at ontheverge.org.
Ave Lawyer, Artistic Director of On the Verge Theater, actress Rachel Lee Rogers, and actor Kevin Hardesty. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks
so much fun. Thanks.